Mics are live.
With that, I'd like to call the LB&A subcommittee to order. This is a subcommittee review of the Department of Correction. It is 1:31. We're in Fairbanks, Alaska at Fairbanks' LIO. Today is Wednesday, May 14th, 2015. Is there anyone online that wishes to testify on the Department of Corrections performance? With that, we're going to take a pause until about 1:45 and see if others show up. I do have a prepared statement that we are making in different communities that we've already taken public testimony in. We have been, as a subcommittee, to Juneau, Anchorage, and Bethel, and this is our fourth and final public hearing. So with that, we will take a brief at ease until 1:45 to see if other members of the public attend either via teleconference or come to the Fairbanks LIO. With that, we're in recess for 15 minutes. Good afternoon. This is Senator Anna Fairclough. We are still in the Fairbanks area at the Fairbanks LIO. With me this afternoon at the table, Senator Coghill, welcome.
Thank
Representative
you.
Kawasaki, welcome. Representative Tammy Wilson, welcome. Today, again, is Wednesday, May 14th, 2014, and it's 1:45. This is an LB&A subcommittee meeting. We are reviewing the Department of Correction for performance. Last year, the legislature passed House Bill 30, developing a new process that will allow us to assess state agencies' performance. Through this performance review process, we will gain a better understanding of how to assess effectiveness and efficiency in agencies and how the agency fulfills its core mission and services to the citizens of the state of Alaska. At the end of the review, the legislature will have an opportunity to review strategies that both improve the effectiveness of the agency and reduce the level of resources necessary to support the agency without sacrificing service. As state revenues estimates continue to decline, we must learn to do more with less without cutting essential services. The performance reviews are a tool that will help us budget smarter and more effectively. Rather than relying on anecdotal information, we are making a concerted effort to reach out to the community to provide us with feedback on the agency's performance and the public's perception of the agency as a whole. Public hearings have been held in Juneau, Anchorage, and Bethel. The purpose of these public hearings is to take public testimony to gather the public's feedback on the operations and interaction of the Department of Corrections, its facilities, and its community programs and resources. During this discussion, we will not be gathering information on sentencing, which is outside the scope of the Department of Corrections' responsibilities, wrongful prosecution, which is also outside the scope of the Department of Corrections' responsibilities, or complaints about the court, judicial system, or juvenile justice system. Please keep your comments focused on the interactions with the Department of Corrections and any of its facilities or services. With that, Representative Wilson, we spoke a little bit earlier today, and I wanted to see if you were going to attend today's meeting, and you had some conversation with me that I thought would be important for our contractors to hear. Representative Wilson.
Thank you very much, Senator Fairclough. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent District 2. Through some finance committee meetings that we had in Juneau, I received this email on April 19th, basically asking how many in jail are misdemeanors, how many are felons, trying to better understand why our jails are filling up the way they are. And so basically my comments are really just to the misdemeanors. Most of those are nonviolent type of crimes. And so some of these are probably out of date at this point. But in the misdemeanor category, we currently have 996 serving or waiting trial more than even serving. Found out that it takes approximately 91 days to go from when you've been charged to when you are out. Through Senator Coghill's staff, it costs approximately $150 a day to be in the Fairbanks Correction Center or any of those like that, and $30 a day if you're on an ankle monitor, and approximately $80 if you're going to be out at the halfway house. So what I just did is did some rough math just to see what we could be saving if everyone were to be able to be on an ankle monitor. But if you weren't on one currently and you're counting all 996 people, it would be $149,400 per day. And then if you figure they'll be there 91 days on average, that would be $13,595,400. If we look then at the ankle monitoring for the same group of people, the same amount of days, it would be $29,880 per day. And for the 91 days in total, it would be $2,719,080. So as you see, there's a big difference between the two. So I didn't even get into most of the time whether or not they have to pay or not. I did help two people walk through the process during session, and I was told they did have to pay at the time. Since then, through some other hearings, we learned there is money set aside for those that can't, and normally they pay only half that amount. The question I don't have answered for you today would be on the ankle monitors, whether or not if you're on ankle monitor, does it count as your days served? Because right now, if you're awaiting trial, all those days, as long as it's for the state, that counts as if you were there. Also, I guess we're lucky that 2,813 people during this time was able to meet the bail or bonding. And a question that was brought up to me was that if they can't afford the bail at the time, but yet they would still be a good selection for a monitor, aren't we still able to keep track of them? So should that really be a reason why we're holding them in jail for 91 days because they can't afford that particular bail? Should that, you know, disqualify you right off? And the other part, just on the felonies, the only part, because there's a lot of these on here, but DUI refusals, there's another 318 that are serving at that point. And it's my understanding now the ankle monitors can't even tell whether or not you've been drinking or not. So that might be another avenue that we have them out there. My concern is, I've talked to some attorneys around town, is that by not utilizing the ankle monitors, in my opinion, from what I've learned as well, we have people serving that could actually be working. They've made a mistake. They still have jobs. They have employers who are willing to work with them, but the longer they sit in jail, the less likely they are to be able to keep that job. And I was told that there were signs all over the jail. I did go one time, didn't look at that time, but I also have been told by quite a few that it is a very hard process to go through. And to me, that should be one of the first things that you're sitting down and speaking with someone and finding out what kind of risk. And also, if they are on ankle monitor, do they also have to have a third party? So if we're requiring bail and then requiring ankle monitor and then a third party, and for those who don't know, a third party basically for most is a 24/7. It'd be watching the whole time. Well, then why would you have an ankle monitor if you're watching the entire time? So, you know, we're just first, our office has just been kind of starting to look at this, concerned about whether or not, you know, the jails are being overloaded with people that could be out and being more self-sufficient or those, but we want to be able to protect what's going on. And lastly, that was brought to my attention about a week ago, two things very briefly is that currently, is my understanding that Fairbanks makes approximately 100 meals more than what they serve, so there you have seconds for those and then throw out the food versus maybe give it to the rescue mission or someone. And just yesterday I was sent an email that wanted to look at the idea of Skyping versus in-person. It takes a lot of time to bring prisoners out and families and working them through. And there's some states, and I'll make sure that you get a copy of the email that I received. Some of the Skyping happens actually in the jail. They just don't have to. It's a much more secured way of being able to do it. It doesn't take quite as much time to do, and then as well as it does some out-of-state security, which they found that the more connected prisoners are to their families, the better it is for when they get released on there. And if it's something that we would be able to do relatively inexpensive, I think it's something we might want to be able to look at. But I think everything is about, we know people make mistakes. Let's try to get them out and back on the right track as soon as possible. And like I said, those are rough numbers that we have, and we're going to be getting more current ones and also be able to find out how many are currently on monitors. With that, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Tammy Wilson. Are there questions from subcommittee members? Thank you so much. Is there anyone else here in the Fairbanks LIO that would like to testify on the performance of the Department of Corrections? You're welcome to also provide testimony directly to our office, and we'll make sure that the contractors get them. My email address is senatoranafairclough@akleg.gov. So I'm happy to provide that again, senatoranafairclough@akleg.gov. You could also send it into the LBNA website directly. I believe there's a link there. Is there anyone online wishing to testify? Any additional comments from subcommittee members? Representative Kawasaki?
No, I just appreciated the input from Representative Wilson. Being on the Corrections Budget Subcommittee, we have over the years, I think it's my eighth year on the subcommittee, we have talked about the number and level of nonviolent offenders that are in the system and asking the same question, whether medical parole or early release on good time or ankle monitors are the way to go. But I think we're going that way. We're slowly evolving that way. Definitely when we're looking at scrubbing the budget and looking at individual numbers, in some cases it makes sense.
Thank you. Senator Coghill?
Yeah, thank you. One of the things that I've watched over the years is trying to get better programmatic approaches in jails. And one of the things that has been a hindrance that may have been solved by Goose Creek is the pretrial jails have to move people around. And there's not only a cost to it, but it's also the inability to complete out programs wherever they're at. So, but I think Goose Creek has solved that to some degree. That's something that I'll probably be asking the commissioner along the way.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. With that, for the benefit of the contractors that are actually managing this particular performance review, I did speak to a resident in the Fairbanks area that we may receive testimony on, and that person indicated that specific to Goose Creek, that it was difficult for families to stay connected with each other, and that families would travel for hours to go down to the facility and meet with a patient, with an inmate, thank you, Representative Kawasaki, with an inmate, and then only to have that time because of the processing happening, have their time limited, which, again, I don't know if it shows statistically, but at least the perception is that when families can't support their inmate that's in prison, that there's a higher likelihood of recidivism. And so that is a cost that may or may not be able to be quantified inside of our research right now. Senator Coghill.
Just on that, one of the things that maybe Goose Creek has helped with, but I think has a potential problem, it's not with just the families wanting to visit. Now it's court appearances. And if they had a holding in the Wasilla Palmer area, the transportation issue would probably be less of an issue if you have a two-day court hearing where you're having to drive back and forth. I don't know if that's a cost to the DOC or just to the inmate only, but it's something I heard just recently.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Senator Fairclough speaking again. One of the other issues that I picked up on during a conversation about corrections was just the movement of inmates in general and whether that is being done effectively or efficiently because of the crowding issues that we move inmates around. And specific to that, for our contractors, it appears that a lot more movement may happen in the fourth quarter. And so as the budgets are getting ready to roll money into the general fund, if those monies are unspent, at least it's been alleged that there could be more activity on prisoners just being moved around the system to make sure that those monies don't lapse so that they're available to the department in the following years. Again, I have nothing to support that, but our contractors are looking at that, and so I would just suggest that we look at fourth quarter to see if there are more costs showing up in the fourth quarter, and if so, if we can quantify what those costs look like. Any other closing comments? Senator Coghill.
Much rather be good looking. So one of the questions that that I would have, and maybe the contractors should look into it, one of the things as a legislator that I hear quite often is between inmates and the corrections officers. Is there a QC or QA on those that we need to be aware of? And is there things that we need as a legislator to either facilitate or maybe we've cut them too tight on some of those things? It's just a question I wanted to ask.
Thank you. Senator Fairclough here, when we were up in Bethel, we had an opportunity to talk with our contractors, and I couldn't give the committee statistics, but it was at least alluded to that Texas had more hardened criminals now. So they went through the process of cleaning house, per se, and making sure that their departments are running efficiently as a state, the state of Texas. And today, it's not necessarily related to the performance review. Today, at least there was a statement made that the criminals inside of at least the Texas correctional facilities are more hardened. So it would be one thing for us to look as we work with the Department of Corrections in our future if we start moving a whole lot of minor offenses outside of our prisons, that we have a different population that we'll be working with as they become more severe cases. And so just so that we're aware that as we try to take different steps to release people in different ways, that there may be a consequence to needing more maximum security and other things. So this is an in-process conversation, but understand that as we move the system or seek to change it as a legislature in policy, is that we're also changing outcomes for what our Department of Corrections may have to deal with that may cost the state money too. Senator Coghill.
So one more thing. In a discussion with my staff this morning, we asked about the system integrity of the contract halfway houses, and there's just more question there than I understand, but maybe that's something DOC has on their regular review. It would be interesting for us to see that, because I think that is one of their cost savings, but if it's not a benefit as well as a cost saving to the degree that they would like, it's just something that we were kicking around a little bit this morning. I've actually personally worked out in the halfway houses from time to time, so I have a little bit of experience, but I understand the quality is quite different as far as enforcement or quality assurance, so something we should ask them.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Another issue for me personally is rehabilitation and back-to-work programs, and it seems to me if the state of Alaska is saying that a prisoner is ready for reentry, then maybe we should be willing to take a risk. And what I'm talking about, isn't there an opportunity somewhere inside the state system to either for 6 months, a year, to provide a job opportunity for those that we believe are rehabbed and we believe that we're willing to release them to the general public? Why wouldn't we try to have some work programs so that they could get, you know, the best start going forward? When I checked on this years ago, so a decade ago, there was resistance at the state level because it was said to me that work programs were expensive to monitor and it required security measures very different and more expensive than keeping inmates in a locked facility. But I still wonder if we're looking to actually rehabilitate and provide an entry back into society, why we couldn't try to find a enterprise agency or a way that we could offer low-risk inmates an opportunity to have that first job at a decent salary, whether it's on a DOT work crew where it's not necessary. There could be some parameters or sideboards, but, you know, we lock people up, but we want them to be successful in getting a job or even finding housing. We've heard as a legislative body that that's very difficult after they've been incarcerated for any amount of time to over a year. It just detaches them from their network that they might have been able to find employment.
Just
Representative Kawasaki.
On that, it just reminds me of the discussion that we had in Juneau as well when we discussed behavioral health and access to behavioral health. The Department of Corrections is the number one provider of behavioral health in the entire state. And I think that's something that we ought to be aware of, that once a person's out, if they, you know, maybe they don't get a job, maybe they go back to the same lifestyle they had. In addition, if they lose out on medications that had stabilized them during the time they were there and no longer have access to it, I think that's a real shame. That's a problem that Health and Social Services definitely has to get involved in that discussion.
Thank you. I think those are valid comments. With that, it is 2:03, and if there's not any, is there anyone else here that would like to make public testimony? Any other public comment? With that, the public comment is closed. Any other comments from committee members? With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you for coming.